This document, Indicators of Life Coherent Peace by Dr. Bichara Sahali, outlines a multidimensional dashboard to measure human and planetary flourishing without reducing complex life capacities to a single technocratic score.
Right.
But to ensure this vision actually survives real-world implementation, we need to immediately focus on strengthening its practical application and structural flow. Let's look closely at the section discussing the dashboard interpretation cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, the structure feels a bit like giving someone a highly complex recipe in Chapter 7, but hiding the severe allergy warnings all the way back in Chapter 10. By the time an institution actually reads the safeguards, they may have already executed the cycle and baked in the harm.
That's clearly laid out. I wonder, though, if we've considered how this structural separation leaves the entire operational engine of the framework deeply vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely.
The structural separation of the interpretation cycle from the safeguards against metric capture inadvertently makes those essential protections feel optional rather than foundational.
Optional, right.
Because in the current draft, the six-step dashboard interpretation cycle in Section 7 is presented as a remarkably clean, standalone administrative process.
You observe, you interpret, you identify.
Exactly. You decide, repair, revise. I mean, it reads like a highly efficient checklist. Meanwhile, the critical safeguards, like protections against data colonialism, technocratic capture, and false commensurability, those are isolated completely in Section 10.
But, I mean, doesn't an institution reading this paper just read the whole thing? The warnings are in the text. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of a municipal director. If I have the manual, I have the safeguards, right?
Well, that makes sense. But could the evidence also support a different conclusion, like the reality of administrative pressure?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah. When you are a municipal director under intense pressure to deliver quarterly results, you look for the operational checklist. You look for Section 7.
Right.
If the safeguards are structurally treated as an appendix, they become an afterthought. This separation creates a massive risk, allowing practitioners to mechanically run those six steps without ever applying the vital safeguards that protect the integrity of the data and the communities involved.
So if they stop reading at Section 7, they build a dashboard that is entirely susceptible to being gamed.
Exactly.
I can see what you're going for here. Let's see how we can strengthen this structural vulnerability. The most direct suggestion here is to weave those specific anti-capture safeguards directly into the chronological steps of the interpretation cycle.
Okay, yeah.
So they function as inseparable, mandatory operational requirements at each individual phase. You want to make it literally impossible for a user to execute a step without also executing the safeguard.
Right, we need to force the institution to confront its own operational blind spots at every single juncture. How might we actually construct that within the text so it isn't just, you know, a theoretical idea?
Well, there are a variety of ways to structure this, but here are just a few possible solutions to give a concrete example of how to execute this integration.
Sure.
Let's take step one, which is observe. You could explicitly integrate the safeguard against false commensability right there.
Oh, okay.
You do this by adding a hard procedural rule stating that qualitative and quantitative data must be logged and stored entirely separately before they are ever viewed together on a screen.
That's fascinating. What are the potential limitations or counterarguments to that idea? Because immediately I can hear a city planner saying, wait, isn't that just going to create double the administrative work for a local government that is already drowning in spreadsheets?
Yeah, for sure.
Why do we need a structural barrier between numbers and stories?
It's a fair question, but the friction is entirely the point. You have to understand the psychological mechanism at play. When a decision maker sees a number and a story on the same page, the human brain has an immediate subconscious urge to mentally average them out.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. If you see a rising statistic in overall water access next to a qualitative narrative of profound grief or displacement caused by how that water infrastructure was built, the brain tries to calculate an net positive.
Wow.
By forcing the data to be isolated during the observe phase, you prevent false commensurability at a cognitive level.
I see. The mechanism prevents the user from smoothing over the rough edges of human experience. And moving to step two, interpret with affected communities, you could directly embed the data colonialism safeguard.
Exactly.
How does that practically look?
You achieve it by requiring a co-signed data ownership agreement with the affected community before any interpretation of the data is allowed to proceed.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
We often see situations where a well-meaning agency flies in, extracts a community's trauma data, and uses it to secure their own institutional funding without giving that community any ownership over the findings.
Right.
If we make a legal ownership agreement a mandatory gatekeeper within step two, the community must legally own their narrative before the institution can leverage it. The institution literally cannot proceed to step three without proving they haven't colonized the data in step two.
And finally, down in step six, which is revise, you could embed the institutional self-protection safeguard. You mandate an independent audit of the revision process itself. This ensures the institution isn't just quietly changing the threshold metrics behind closed doors to make their next quarter look better.
Integrating these mechanisms changes the entire momentum of the paper. It transforms a philosophical warning into an unavoidable procedural roadblock against technocratic capture.
Absolutely. So we've protected how the data is safely collected and integrated. Now, if we follow the operational timeline, that naturally brings us to the moment the decision makers are actually staring at the populated dashboard.
Right, the dashboard itself.
The framework introduces five distinct indicator types for each domain. You have signal, threshold, distribution, narrative, and repair. As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that all five indicator types must be viewed together to avoid reductionism.
Yes.
You can't just look at the signal. You have to look at the distribution of that signal and the narrative surrounding it.
It is a brilliant way to force a holistic view.
It is, but I really have to push back on how this operates in the wild. Let's ground this in a real scenario. Imagine I am staring at my dashboard for the basic life necessities domain.
Okay.
My signal indicators are flashing bright green. Aggregate water access is up 20% across the district. But my narrative indicators are flashing deep red. Community testimonies reveal extreme humiliation and fear of violent enforcement regarding how that water is being metered and billed.
Wow.
I am paralyzed. I have two completely valid, entirely contradictory metrics within the exact same domain. How do I act?
Is the connection between A and B fully established in the material, or is that an area to potentially bolster? Because you've hit on the core issue, the dashboard tells you everything. But it doesn't instruct you on what matters most when these truths collide.
Exactly.
The five distinct indicator types provide a beautifully comprehensive view of life capacity, but the framework currently lacks a heuristic for resolving direct conflicts between them.
Let's unpack the mechanics of that gap.
While the paper brilliantly forbids a single composite score, which is a massive strength to prevent the exact false commensurability we just discussed, it leaves a glaring procedural gap when indicators within the same domain directly contradict one another.
Like the water access example.
Right. As you pointed out with your scenario, if a signal indicator shows rising volume, but a narrative indicator reveals extreme systemic humiliation in the provision of that volume, the framework simply does not instruct the user on which metric takes precedence.
It just says both matter.
Exactly. It states that both matter. But in municipal administration, resources are finite and decisions are ultimately binary. You either fund the expansion of that water program or you halt the expansion to investigate the abuse.
You have to choose.
Right. Without a mechanism to weigh these conflicting realities, the framework risks creating total administrative gridlock. Leaders can endlessly debate the multidimensional metrics without ever taking action.
It's the paradox of multidimensionality. If everything is critical, how do you determine what is urgent?
Mm-hmm.
The suggestion to overcome this paralysis is to introduce a clear conflict resolution protocol or a hierarchical weighting principle among the five indicator types to guide decision-making when metrics diverge. You don't need to reduce them to a single score, but you absolutely need an operational tiebreaker.
Right. We are not asking the author to compromise their stance against reductionism. We are asking them to provide a roadmap for navigating the complexity that successfully captured.
Okay, to make this actionable, here are a few concrete examples of what that conflict resolution protocol might look like. These are just a few out of all possible ways of solving the problem, but they illustrate the procedural clarity required.
Okay.
First, you could establish a threshold supremacy rule.
How would that function mechanically?
It would dictate that crossing a red line threshold indicator, let's say an irreversible ecological collapse or a severe trauma risk, immediately and automatically pauses all positive reporting on signal indicators in that specific domain until the threat is mitigated.
Oh, wow.
It essentially acts as a hard emergency brake. If the threshold is flashing red, it simply doesn't matter how green the signal is. The system halts. You can't not claim progress on the volume of water if the aquifer is actively collapsing.
That is incredibly direct. Is there a risk that focusing solely on pausing the system might overlook the need for proactive restoration?
That's where a second approach could come in, creating a repair precondition rule. This would explicitly state within the text that positive signal indicators cannot be officially validated or celebrated by the institution until corresponding repair indicators for past harms in that exact same domain are fully funded and active.
That is a fascinating way to enforce accountability. You cannot officially claim the win on the new water pipeline until you fully funded the repair for the neighborhood you destructed to build it.
Exactly.
It forces the institution to look at the dashboard not as a static report card, but as an active, mandatory sequence of obligations. The past has to be addressed before the present can be validated.
Exactly. You could even implement a procedural rule stating that narrative indicators of extreme structural violence always trigger an immediate independent audit, regardless of what the distribution or signal indicators show.
Right.
By providing these concrete heuristics, the author empowers the local official to actually make a decision when the dashboard is blinking in contradictory colors. It transitions the tool from a purely diagnostic display into a definitive instrument of governance.
And if a well-funded city planner gets paralyzed by contradictory data, we have to consider what happens to a severely underfunded local agency trying to use the system.
Right. Capacity is a huge issue.
The author specifically designed the tiered use section to help constrained local governments bodies implement the dashboard without suffering from administrative overload, proposing a minimum dashboard, an expanded dashboard, and a full diagnostic dashboard.
Okay, so what I really like about this part is the pragmatism. Not every municipality has the resources, the staff, or the budget to run a full 10-domain, 50-indicator participatory evaluation cycle. It's a necessary inclusion.
It is, but if we look closely at what is actually included in that minimum dashboard, we start to see some alarming omissions. The minimum dashboard tier sacrifices too much of the framework's unique philosophical essence in the name of administrative convenience.
Let's analyze exactly what gets left on the cutting room floor.
The critical weakness here is found in the specific domains the author chose to cut for the minimum tier. By reducing it to only cover basic necessities, health, agency, ecological risk, distribution, and repair, the framework completely and entirely strips out Domain 9, Cultural-Linguistic Worlds, and Domain 4, Felt Being.
Wait, really? Entirely?
Entirely. These omitted domains are not extraneous fluff. They are the exact elements that differentiate this life-coherent dashboard from standard, historically reductionist evaluation models.
Oh, I see.
If a local government adopts the minimum dashboard, they are no longer tracking language survival, sacred site protection, chronic humiliation, or intergenerational memory. Without these deeply human, highly qualitative measures, the minimum tier risks reverting to the very metric capture and life blindness the paper explicitly fights against.
It's like trying to assess the health of a forest by only counting the number of trees while completely ignoring the quality of the soil and the mycelial networks beneath the surface. You might hit your numbers, but the ecosystem is still quietly collapsing.
Exactly.
It accidentally validates the assumption that culture and feelings are luxury metrics rather than foundational life capacities. I can see what you're going for here. Let's see how we can strengthen this part.
Right.
The suggestion to rectify this is to completely redesign the minimum dashboard to ensure it retains a compressed but philosophically complete version of the life coherent framework. It must prioritize the author's unique qualitative measures over standard quantitative ones. The minimum tier cannot just be the easiest things to count. It must be a miniature representation of the entire philosophy.
I wholeheartedly agree with protecting the core philosophy.
But we just established that these underfunded municipalities are drowning in spreadsheets.
Right.
If we add all this qualitative measurement back in, doesn't it defeat the entire purpose of a streamlined minimum dashboard? How do we justify keeping the qualitative stuff without breaking the agency's budget?
Well, there are highly effective ways to streamline without amputating the core concepts. We don't have to force the full exhaustive cycle. Here are a couple of concrete examples of how to redesign this minimum tier. These are offered as just a few possible solutions.
Okay, what are they?
Instead of deleting the felt being and cultural linguistic worlds domains entirely, merge them. You could combine them into a single mandatory qualitative check for the minimum tier titled something like cultural and emotional viability. This ensures the concepts remain present without demanding separate 50-page indicator sets.
Building on that point, what if we looked at it from the perspective of how the data is collected? Another highly actionable solution is to implement a strict procedural rule stating that even the minimum tier must feature at least one active narrative indicator across the entire system.
Right.
Something like an ongoing open oral history project or a continuously monitored grievance log.
Exactly. A grievance log doesn't require a massive budget or a team of data scientists. It just requires a different approach to listening. It guarantees that the lived experience and human voices cannot be engineered out of the evaluation, no matter how constrained the budget is.
You could also require that the basic life necessities domain in the minimum tier must be evaluated using a felt being lens. So instead of just counting gallons of water or megawatts of power, the minimum evaluation must ask, is the provision of this necessity causing humiliation or preserving dignity?
That's the structural reinforcement the text needs. By forcing the qualitative assessment into the structural foundation of the minimum tier, you ensure the author's unique life value philosophy survives the scaling down process.
Yeah.
You make the minimum dashboard inherently life coherent rather than just a slightly better version of standard counting. It ensures that even a rapid screening process remains deeply grounded in the relational and cultural realities of the affected communities.
It really is a phenomenal piece of work, and mapping out the mechanisms of these structural alignments will only make it more robust in the real world.
Let's quickly recap the main points of our critique today to ensure the author has a clear roadmap for the next iteration of this framework. First, we discussed the critical need to integrate the anti-capture safeguards natively into the dashboard interpretation cycle.
Right.
So in, we identified the necessity of adding a conflict resolution heuristic to balance contradicting indicator types within the same domain. And finally, we explored the importance of ensuring the minimum dashboard tier retains the unique philosophical elements of cultural worlds and felt being, rather than sacrificing them for convenience.
To summarize the actionable takeaways, weave the specific safeguards from Section 10 directly into the 6 chronological steps in Section 7 as mandatory procedural requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Define a clear hierarchy rule, like threshold supremacy or a repair precondition, to guide decision makers when signal and narrative data inevitably conflict. And for the tiered use section, merge rather than delete the qualitative domains in the minimum tier, ensuring that at least one narrative indicator remains mandatory, even in the most streamlined applications.
We warmly invite the listener to submit their revised material back to the critique for further feedback as this project continues to evolve.
Absolutely.
When the warning lights on a society start flashing, we don't just need a system that points out what is broken. We need a system that structurally refuses to let us look away until we understand who is hurting, why it matters, and how to begin the repair.